It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along. Good to see my partner and my friend who has been on assignment, Mike Ward, back in studio.
Back again, man.
On assignment in Kansas, chasing whitetails. We'll get into that.
That's all we did was chase them.
You chased them. Right? Yeah. Well, listen, it's pre-rut, right? So you just got to.
Yeah, not much going on right now. They feeding and laying up.
Yeah.
You know, they're coming out at night. So I got a bunch of cameras out and seeing a lot of really good ones at night.
Yeah. A picture Mike sent me the other day when I was checking up on him in Kansas. He sent it to me, and I just had pulled over there going to the Dollar General store, and I just stopped and looked at all those pictures. I said, my God.
Yeah. Well, that one that I sent you, I had hunted there that afternoon. Before we left to come back home, to come back home. Anyway, he came in. I saw some does and a little buck, but he came in after I left, and he was
a monster.
He's a monster. He's a 180, 90. I don't know. He could be a two. Yeah, I don't know. I think he's a big one.
He's as close to a two as I think I've seen.
So, yep.
Back here at home, of course, we'll talk about it. Planting time for a lot of folks. I've been on tractor pretty much since Mike left, except got out. Still have red snapper quota out there. Still season open. Went and caught some snapper over last weekend. So we'll get into that in later on in the show and talk about bow season open here in Alabama. And we're looking forward, by the time we open our eyes again, it'll be gun season around here. Do want to start off with a little something different on the show this week. And I got an email about this guy. And I said, yeah, you know what? We ought to get him on to talk more about this. His name's Jonathan Lusk, and he's the founder and CEO of Bird Dog. And instead of me trying to explain what Bird Dog is to y'all, this is what's great when you have a guest. Hey, Jonathan, welcome to the show. And what is Bird Dog?
Bird Dog is an Airbnb for hunting. So we partner with landowners who have got property, private property, who have got lodges, typically guides, game, and food. They don't always have to have guides. But we allow folks to go book hunts on our platform on private land so that they can go hunting and fishing. You know, we started it 2 years ago. Really, my background is managing money for a bunch of families. And I was trying to figure out how to make more income for this family that had a ranch. And I said, hey, I'm going to put it on the Airbnb for hunting and make some income. And it doesn't exist. So I went and raised some capital and said, let's go find 10 ranches and take photos of them and put ratings and reviews and pricing, just like you would go buy tickets to a football game or, you know, go to a restaurant or whatever. That's how easy it should be to book hunts. And so we started it with 10, and now we're at 70 ranches, and it's kind of exploded. So you've got landowners who are super happy hosting folks or, you know, offering up their ranches, and then hunters who have access to more properties to go hunt deer and exotics and birds and everything.
Yeah, it's a cool idea. And talking about here in Alabama, I want to talk about, you know, expansion here in Alabama. I do have one warning for you, as in your business operation here, that in Airbnbs, people are happy to say, hey, the people were nice, the place was good, you know, this is a nice view or whatever. We're dealing with hunters. And so if the hunting's real good on a ranch, and I go put a comment on how it was, I'm going to say, yeah, it was no good. There's no deer there.
Yeah.
Tried to make sure it's open for me next year.
Yeah.
I want honest feedback. I mean, that's why we have a rating and review system, because if the ranch isn't very good, we don't want them on our property.
Oh, no, Jonathan. I'm saying the only people that lie more than hunters are
Sean feels a 190, and he says, man, that's terrible hunting. I would never go back there again.
Right, because I want to make sure it's open.
I'm tracking with you. It's your honey hole.
Yeah. That's right. At that point, I start sandbagging and say, nah. Nobody wants anything to do with this. And if they go, look, have I booked it for the following 3 weeks too? But
so this takes because
I mean, there's a world of guides and outfitters out there, and people are looking to go take a trip, but they also there's so many. It's almost, for me, it's gotten to be paralysis by analysis, right? When you go, there's all these states, and I don't know this guide from that guide. So hopefully, this helps people make a easier choice.
It's way easier. I mean, what I noticed when I started doing this, and we started in Texas, and 95% of the land is privately owned. So if you want to go hunting, you got to own a ranch or be invited. And if they do have commercial operations, the websites are typically, you know, 20 years old with old photos.
You got that
right. You
got
a call for pricing.
Yeah.
You got a call for pricing. And if you're not already a big hunter, it's a non-starter for you. And like 50% of our hunters are new to hunting. You know, they got kids who are 9 to 15 years old and they want to get into it, but dad, mom don't know how to do it. So we do a lot of hunters education. And then we go, hey, you know, you buy stuff on Amazon, you can book hunts that way. And then the existing hunters, they might have somebody they like, but they may have hunted the same ranch 10 or 15 times. They're like, hey, why don't you go shoot gators in Louisiana or, you know, whitetail in South Texas or pheasant in South Dakota? Like, you choose what you want to do and then read what people are saying about it, unless they're sandbagging and taking the spot from you. And then, you know, and then you can go make a choice. I mean, everything else is purchased like this except for hunting and fishing, and that's why we started this.
Why do you think it took so long for Jonathan, you know, be the first person to go, you know, we ought to do this? I mean, I wonder what that disconnect was, because you're right. There's so much of what we do is bought that way, but it hadn't moved into hunting that much.
Because, you know, if you're in technology and you're on like the East or West Coast and you try to come talk to a landowner and say, hey, man, I want to put your ranch in my app, it'd be cool. They're like, get off my property. Yeah. Like, I don't trust you.
That's right.
And so we just started with a bunch of people that trusted us. And we said, hey, man, like, the way that the next generation is buying things is all online. And I know you're working off a yellow pad and you're calling guys to come hunt. But we have a couple thousand people a day looking for hunts. I could fill the dates you want. Like, when you're not on your property, if you just want to put, you know, 2 days on it or 2 months, we'll go sell hunts for you. And it'll be new guys. You don't have to worry about guys not calling you back or whatever. You just go host them and we'll take care of all the marketing, the payment, you know, everything for you. And you can just go on your property.
It's a pretty good gig.
So obviously there's two to tango here. You got people coming on looking for hunts and booking hunts. But yeah, obviously another part of this is recruiting. You know, you've got Texas. I'm looking at your website, birddogit.com. A lot of Texas here, but I see some other states, South Carolina, elsewhere. But obviously you're looking to, if you're talking to me here in Alabama, you're looking to expand.
I want Alabama. Yeah, I know. It's like, I mean, I would love to have a bunch of spots in Alabama for hunting, for fishing, lodges, and grow that way. And we just partnered with Field and Stream, and we created Field and Stream Excursions powered by Bird Dog. So they came to us and said, hey, we want you to create a website that's co-branded, and then we want to send it to all of our users. They've got 100,000 a day, and we want them to go from reading about it to like going out on these adventures together. And Doug, their CEO, was like, well, how long will that take? I was like, well, it'll take me about 3 days to build that. And he's like, let's do it. So we just launched it. But the point is, they're out of Nashville, and a lot of their readers are in the Southeast. And I was like, this is a huge opportunity for us to grow more properties in the Southeast, not only to get more hunters to come in, but also, you know, from other states, but also, you know, open it up in Alabama. And I'm pumped about it.
Sounds good. It's unique. What do we have, a kind of a price range, what we're talking about for, let's say, a 3 day or a 5 day hunt or a 7 day hunt? What kind of pricing you have on that?
Yeah, so like we've got anything from day dove hunts, you know, that are $150, all the way to, you know, we've got several lodges in South Africa that are more than that. Actually, it's cheaper to hunt there if you can get over there.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if it's on whitetail deer, it's anywhere from, you know, $1,000 to, we had some guys shoot some 300-inch whitetail yesterday, and that's like $25,000. I mean, it can get pricey.
Wow.
But yeah, we've got everything on our platform to fit people's budgets. You know, geographically, we're growing that. That's what I'm really focused on. You know, and then what species you want. So you can just search by species and location, all that, and it's only going to grow. I mean, when we launched on Fox News on Tuesday, we were on Fox Business, I had 10 new ranches that day. It was like,
man,
Florida, South Dakota, Idaho. They're like, we got mountain lions and elk and bear. I was like, okay. I was like, this thing's about to get rowdy. So now we're talking to you guys, and we want to grow in Alabama. And what we do is we go to the landowners and say, hey, what do you want to price it? And we keep a percentage of whatever we keep 20% of whatever we sell.
Sure.
And then we can tell you what the market wants. And they'll say, hey, you know, based on the pricing, here's what people will pay for this. And here are the amenities that they want. Here's what they don't care about. And then you can make a better, you know, better decision.
Sure. It's interesting, too. Amenities. Is it Wi-Fi that they want?
what is it,
a roof and Wi-Fi?
It's usually Wi-Fi, and they want to shoot skeet. like, because there's downtime, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, if they're hunting whitetail, for example, or exotics, I mean, exotics you get a lot during the day, but just use whitetail as an example. You're out in the morning and you're out, an hour or two before sundown. So you have all this free time and you either want to get work done or you're watching football. But people are like, hey, I want to go explore the ranch. I want to go shoot skeet. You definitely have to have Wi-Fi. We had a couple ranches, we had that feedback, and we're like, hey, you got to get this done. But it's not that challenging, you know, we are able to, like, kind of give them the feedback. And all the landowners are great.
Good stuff. Just joining us, talking to Jonathan Lusk. Bird Dog It is the website, birddogit.com. So I got to figure, before we wrap up, what do you like to hunt? I mean, what's your, like, you're in it, but I mean, you as a consumer, what do you like to go for?
I love duck hunting. I mean, because...
Me too.
I mean, I like bird hunting in general, but I love hunting ducks because, you know, I'm with a bunch of buddies and I have specific guys that I love going with. And it's more about hanging out with them. I mean, we'll slay the ducks, but I got some pretty funny friends, and just hanging out with them in camp and in the blind, it is a blast. We go every January, and that's probably my favorite thing. And then I'm bringing my sons up. You know, I've got a 9-year-old boy, I've got a 6-year-old boy, and a 3-year-old daughter. And actually, my daughter is the killer of all of them. But she's like, I want to go hunt, Daddy. I want to go hunt ducks and bucks and bears.
I like this kid.
She's awesome, man. And so I love taking them out in the blind. And go, you know, I'll go shoot. I shot like a red stag this year with my 6-year-old. And then, you know, my 9-year-old is going to shoot a doe this year. I just love being with them. And for me, it's like friends and family and just hanging out with buddies. And we have a lot of corporate groups that come hunt. I mean, we have a ton of corporate groups because they're used to going to, you know, hunt on one or two ranches. And we're like, you know, here's 70 different options. And so it's kind of sitting around the campfire is what I love. You know, and just being with people. And that's kind of what we've created is like experiences that it's just easy to have these life impacting experiences. That's what Bird Dog does.
Good stuff. Jonathan, obviously birddogit.com for people looking for hunts. What about people that are looking to get with you about marketing their property? Do they go to the same website or how do they do that?
They go to the same website and you'll see in the top right corner, there's a drop down list and it says list my land. And then you'll put in your name and your email address and a little bit about your property, and we will call you back the same day and get more information. And it takes about 3 days to list it. But typically the limiting factor is like photos, because photos and ratings and reviews are what sell. And so if you have really good photos, that's great. If not, we've got to get them taken. Because if they're not good photos, guys are just going to, you know, skip over it. But if they're really good, you can tell a true story about what you have. It's easier to do. So, but it is very quick. So, I mean, we got 10 on the board, like 3 days or whatever today is, Thursday, on Tuesday, from like 5 different states. And so if they go on today or tomorrow, whenever, we're going to have it pretty quick. I mean, I was talking to these guys this morning in South Dakota, and it's opening pheasant this weekend. I was like, hey, man, if any of you guys need help selling hunts, call us, because we put it up really quick because their season ends January 31st. I was like, so we're here to help you. We're here to serve the land. The landowner is our customer. And then, you know, the hunter's the user. And so we want the landowner to be taken care of. And if he or she's taken care of, we know the hunter's going to have a great time. And they're going to go tell all their buddies. And this thing's just going to get bigger and bigger.
Okay. And reminder, too, when you go look at comments and ratings and review, if I'm on there saying never go to this place, that may be a clue that it's pretty darn good.
Need to book it.
That's right. Yep. Jonathan, thank you for your time. And
thank you, John.
Appreciate it. We'll be checking out the website.
Hey, appreciate you guys. Thank you all so much.
All right, there he is, Jonathan Lusk and the company Bird Dog and birddogit.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have y'all along. Good to see Mike back. Been on assignment in Kansas.
Yes, sir. Jay's getting ready to go on assignment out there, too.
Y'all are all going on assignments. I need an assignment.
Yeah, well, you were going to go on an assignment.
I didn't. I stayed home. Went on which, by the way, we still got snapper quota. Snapper season still open. I went out and caught fish. Had a better trip. It caught my limit. Had a better trip in October than I've had through the year. And one thing we were talking about, went to a close-in spot. We did a little camping on the Dolphin Island, then went around and fished. those fish that were, you know, I've talked to this story the whole year. I had places that had tons of snapper on them.
Right.
I mean, they just didn't measure, right, yeah, in some of these close 15 spots.
15-inch, and yeah, they got to be 16 or better.
And I don't know. We'll get Dr. Sean Powers on here back to tell us. He's told us before, and I've forgotten, how fast snapper grow yearly in certain age classes. But those places that were full of 14-and-a-halves, 15s, 15-and-a-halves, are now 16-and-a-halves and a little bit better.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're still – I didn't show up there and I had 20-pounders.
Right.
But places that had been driving me crazy all year –
couldn't catch a keeper.
Couldn't catch a keeper. Since July, I'm going to tell you, they've grown enough that they're keepers.
Yeah.
So,
you know, the other thing, too, you know, we talk about the king mackerel all the time.
Yeah.
There haven't been any king mackerel. Right now, they are killing the king mackerel. Killing them.
So you've looked for them all summer.
Yeah, but you can go out there right now, go anywhere around the ships or any of the bridge rubble or southeast banks, anywhere out there right now, and they are killing them.
I should have drug a bait when I was going in and out, but I did not. I did not. And you know why the kings are doing that? It's because we're all hunting.
That's right.
They know that.
Yep.
Listen, this man does both too. Our buddy Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing joining us now. Hey, Jay.
Hey, guys. How y'all been?
Well, good. Mike's been real good. I guess I've been real good. No, I'm just talking about the. And we'll have to get Dr. Powers on, but I swear this. I mean, I fish certain places, right? And place that was full of not keepers by an inch or a half inch. Go back in October. So just anybody who's had a spot that's full of shorts.
Almost keepers.
Almost
not
keepers
quite.
On snapper. Yeah. They've grown up enough for me, and now they're keepers. So that's good news.
Yeah, it is. Matter of fact, guys, y'all brought up fishing. I talked a buddy of mine into taking some friends of mine from out of town. Of course, I'm not home right now. And anyway, took them in my boat. And they caught 7 snapper over 20 pounds.
Man.
Yep. And they caught.
That's
and they
doing
cut
it.
Their ship, I mean, they cut their trip a little short to come in, but they had 7 over 20 pounds. And I was like, well, that's really good. And one big amberjack and some other assorted fish. But yeah, they did a good job.
Did they fish your spot or his spot?
Mine. They went down my track line on the last trip I went on,
yeah,
and just fished the place because he didn't know where to go. I showed him how to use my over the phone FaceTime. I said, you just follow that track right there, and where you see all them little squiggly lines.
yeah that I do the same thing with people on the boat with me. They'll say, do you fish this spot much? I said, okay, come over here.
Yeah,
they're like, my gosh. I said, yeah, that
no wonder there's no fish here. You fish it every day.
yep.
Oh my gosh,
that's good.
And other thing that you mentioned, Mike's back from assignment. You're on assignment, heading for some Kansas hunting.
Yeah, man, I was printing out maps today.
Well, he's not going right now. He's up in Georgia working at the nuclear plant right now, aren't you, Jay?
Oh yeah. I'm up here at Vogel. I don't know if a lot of people know it, but our Southern Company built 2. Power reactors up here. The first one's built in, I think, 36 years in this country. And so I was here during the end of the construction of those, and then they called me to come back up. Unit 3 will be the first outage, refuel outage, that it'll be going in here. Well, it's in it now. Started 2 days ago. So I'll be here for another month or so. But when I took the assignment, I said under one condition, and the guy goes, I know, you're going to Kansas in November.
Yeah.
And I said, yep. I said, as long as y'all okay with that, I'll commit to come back. If not, then
find somebody else.
Yep.
Yeah. You, anyway, reminds me. Well, we're doing the outdoor show, and we'll keep talking outdoor stuff. But Jay, get ready for a text from me here soon because I do want to talk about. On Midday Mobile this last week had stories talking about these AI companies and Google and other that are looking to build their own nuclear reactors because they're going to need that power to power AI. And maybe AI is what gets us back on track with nuclear because they can't power it any other way. So,
well, right now there's a massive need for future power. I mean, even Microsoft.
Yeah, Microsoft was one, yeah.
Yeah, they bought a reactor over Three Mile Island. They're going to resurrect it and get it going. Palo Verde, I think is no Susquehanna. Susquehanna.
Mm-hmm. I know it well.
They're back online.
If you fly into Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where I do a couple times a year, they take that big bank there of the Susquehanna River, and you fly right over there, Three Mile Island. I mean, think about them moving these places, these AI facilities, not based on Silicon Valley or whatever. They're moving it to where they can buy something that's power that they need. They can get the power they need. They've got to have so much power for this AI that nuclear is the way they're going to. Maybe that's what gets us back on it.
Well, another thing, these data centers, a data center takes more power to run a data center than I'm going to say all of Daphne.
Absolutely.
It's a huge amount of power. And so I know in our backyard in the southeast, there's a lot of activity right now to try to be competitive in the power industry so that the United States is competitive with the development of AI data and all these things that are coming down the pipe. It's going to be a tremendous push for power. That's going to be the only thing that could slow us down.
That's not good for you. That means you got to work more.
It's more deer.
Got to pass some of this on to them, these younger folks, you know. I mean, there's going to be some opportunities that have not been out there in the past coming up, I feel like.
Well, Jay, get ready to hear Jay Graddick's with me on Midday Mobile sometime soon talking about nuclear power. Talking hunting right now and season open here in Alabama. Bow season's open. A couple things from your – I'm kind of doing a roundup here. I was talking to some people last week and I also talked to Chuck Sykes on the show. He said it went from bad news last year acorn-wise in his woods to, you know, you could roll your ankle and break it in the woods right now. What are you seeing – what are you hearing acorn crop in your neck of the woods?
I'm hearing pretty massive up there around in the Clark County area. I've gotten a few pictures where people have shot some bucks on acorn, you know, in the woods, not sitting on food plots. So that's, and I think that's a positive. I think it's a good thing. It just, the corn pile's got competition, and I think that's a really good thing.
Me too.
You know, yep. And people, you know, this time of year and the rest of the season, people might not like what I'm going to say, but they get too hung up on pictures. And I promise you, when those big bucks roll into Skinner, one thing I do when I got time is I'll cut that stomach cavity open and see what they're eating. And there's a lot of them that don't go to corn.
So really?
They make a living in the woods. When you cut them open, they're going to have all kinds of little, like, greenbrier and acorns and you know, things of this nature, honeysuckle. And, depending on what time of the – how long ago they ate it, you can tell more about it, of course. But there's a lot of big bucks that come in there that, you know, an older age class deer that don't go to corn. And then a lot of hunters will say, you know what? We ain't had a picture of this deer all year.
Yep.
So-and-so went over there and shot him and blah, 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 you know. So
guaranteed you don't get all the pictures of the deer on your property over corn. Just doesn't happen. All the time, people tell me they see deer that they never knew they had on their property. They never came to a feed or anything. And I've done it. I've done it in the past.
Right.
Kill a deer and never see it before, you know.
Right.
Now, during the rut, it's one thing because deer travel. But we're talking about right now when they're just on feed. You know, and I feed during season, I bait during season. That's what it is baiting.
Right.
I don't run a lot of corn. If I use any corn, it's to get, like, I get rack attack from G&D, and I use the corn to help the rack attack move through the feeder, right, so it doesn't get clogged up. But I use it, and I'll continue to use it because it's like I've never seen a buck magnet like that stuff. But I brought this up last year. I wonder if we don't shoot ourselves in the foot a little bit because that buck can go to that rice bran, that rack attack, right, which brings them in. But they can hit that thing and get the number of calories that might take them 6 hours on the hoof in a day. They could get that in an hour. And I wonder if that keeps them – until the rut, it keeps that deer in a thicket and not out moving through the woods. Like, I mean, if they're feeding on acorns or feeding through the woods, crossing roads, those kind of things. I just wonder about that. You know, I don't know if there's any research done, but I mean, if his job is to stay alive, so he's got to not get killed and he's got to get calories. If you can get the calories faster, that's more time you can spend not getting shot.
Yeah. And I think, you know, nature kind of manages that for the animal. I mean, if he's getting all he's eating, all he needs, you don't see deer just sit there and gorge themselves to where it's, where their belly's so big they can't hardly walk, right? I mean, they eat a little bit and they go lay down and they process that food. So, and I think there could be a little something to that, Sean. I know one thing, the way the law used to be, and some people never did figure it out, but where you used to could feed deer, and then 10 days before season's over, you're supposed to have all your feed up, right?
Before season started.
Before it started. I'm sorry, I said over. But, yeah, and so what a side note to that was, you're attracting all those deer to a common area, and in at the same time, they deplete the high-quality natural food in close proximity to that feeder. Mm-hmm. So when you take that feed away in time for the season to open, and if you went back to that place, deer move on. When the quality of the food is not good, it starts to go downhill, then they go find other sources to eat. So you're almost shooting yourself in the head to feed them too long in a given spot.
I can understand that. That's a good analogy on that. I've never thought about it. But that is.
A lot of people go, man, I've been feeding these deer all year, and I've been hunting for 2 weeks, and I ain't even seen a deer.
Yeah.
Well, guess why? It's just like the acorn tree, okay? If you've got an acorn tree that deer are visiting on a daily basis, when those acorns dry up, they might come back and check that tree a couple of times. But they move on.
Sure.
They don't come to that tree that's not producing every day in hopes of finding an acorn on the ground. They're going to go to the next best food source. And that's nature's way of keeping them healthy, I think.
There you go.
I'm no scientist, but that just seems the way it's been.
Well, you do, but you do work at nuclear facilities, so I'll say that's a good thing. Coming right back, more with our guest, Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Process, and right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back to FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. I don't know, because we get our buddy Jay Graddick, who likes to hunt as much as any of us right here. But we got in a conversation. I took him off on talking about nuclear power.
That's right.
And then during the news break there, Mike gets in the conversation about bionic eyes.
Yep.
This is what happens. So, Jay, you and Mike were talking about some kind. What, you like the Terminator? You got those robot eyes? Or what do you got now?
Well, I'm not thermal, okay, but I got some Lee Major $6 million eyes almost.
Man, this is important for those. I mean, so and Mike and I are 20 years apart in age,
right?
But at 52, I got eye issues happening right now for and I'm back and forth. I joked about that during turkey season where I got my distance vision glasses on, but then when the turkey gets close, I got to take them off so I can see the sight on my shotgun.
Yeah,
so I got all the eye problems,
and see, I've been wearing contacts when I turkey hunt. I wear contacts, and the other day when I was deer hunting, I was using contacts, and I didn't like it. For some reason, it didn't work out good, so I went back to use my glasses while I was deer hunting. So I knew Jay had this operation on his eyes and had lenses put in. And I've been, every time I talk to Jay, and we talk all the time, I keep meaning to ask him about them. And he had it done about a year ago. And one of the reasons is because he deer hunts and get tired of fooling with glasses, just like I do. So, Jay, tell us about the lenses and what you did.
Yep. Time flies. It's been 2 years now, Mike. It's been two years.
Crazy.
I met with a guy that worked with me, and out of that conversation, he had he wasn't wearing glasses. And I asked him about it, and he said, I got these lenses put in my eyes. And so that afternoon, I was in his surgeon's office and talking to him. I said, look here, whatever you did for Mike Sullivan, I want it. Well, basically what it is it's like cataract surgery. They take your natural lens out and put a man-made lens under that outer layer of your eyeball. And it's maybe 2-3 days at the most. You might see a little fuzzy spot on the side of your eye where they cut your eyeball, but it goes away real fast. And I mean immediately. When you come out of that surgery, you got clear vision. You can see things 6-8 inches from your face, and you can see things a mile away. Distance is the whole broad spectrum. It ain't like you got to do one eye closed and one eye far, okay?
Right.
Like it used to.
They call these multifocal. They call them multifocal lenses.
And far away.
Yes.
So it's a game changer. I'm telling you. I went through the same thing, Mike. I got to the point I was wearing triple bifocals, and I was having to have glasses made so that my readers in my bifocal parts went all the way to the frame so I could shoot my bow.
Yeah.
Because I didn't wear contacts.
Right.
And you talk about aggravation. You know, we go hunting, it might be drizzling rain.
Right.
And you got your eyes, your glasses are fogging up and wet and all that stuff. It might be just you breathing, especially turkey season. You might have a face mask on and you take a couple of breaths and your dang eyeballs, your glasses are fogged up.
That's right.
You lose your glasses. You scratch them up. You
break
them.
You sit on them is what I do. I sit on them.
You have to go to the doctor every year, get a new one. So I did the math, and it made sense for me to do it, and it is a game changer.
And especially for hunting, for fishing, for everything. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, that's got to be awesome. And I think I'm getting ready to do that too. And the cost it's expensive. But there again, like you say, when you look at how much glasses cost, and you get glasses every year or 2 years, then, you know, it doesn't take long to add up.
That's right.
But the cost on that is what? Around, just
well,
close.
For both eyes, for me, it was a little bit over $10,000.
Yeah. Well,
now they even got, if you're worried about it and you say, well, they might mess my eyeball up or whatever. Well, the lenses they have now, let's say they didn't exactly get your prescription just right, now they can adjust it without surgery. Somehow or another, they can actually tweak that lens to get you good vision. I had my vision checked the other day for some, I can't remember what I went and did, but I got 20/16.
Man. So, once again, bionic man. You know how they adjust it? They just reach in there like on the back of a scope.
I don't know.
Yeah, but that's
mine's
great.
Been great.
You know, like I say, for somebody that hunts a lot, fishes a lot, that has really got to be good. I had to wear my glasses, take my glasses out in the Gulf, you know. And, of course, right. I got prescription sunglasses, so that helps. But a lot of times you can't see your machine good. You have to flip your depth recorder and all that is good with sunglasses on. I mean, it's a pain.
Now, if you want to sell the idea to the wife about spending that money for the
tell us how to do that.
Gulf, if you fish in the Gulf, just point out all the better safety, and you're taking the kids with you. A, if you lose your glasses, you can read your machines like you're talking about. You don't have issues, you know, like tying knots or maybe, you know, it just makes life so much better.
I can see all the things I'm grabbing to climb a tree now I couldn't see before. Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
Yep.
The safety feature.
Absolutely. There's things there that you know, you go to, you go out there in Kansas. You've been around how I hunt, Mike.
Yep.
And you go out there and you climb up that tree or whatnot, and then, you know, maybe you got readers or maybe you got to wear full-blown glasses like I did, and you reach in your backpack. Oh, Lord, I left them in the truck.
Yep. Yep.
You know, and so you've done put yourself at risk. You're more likely not going to have a good hunt, let alone putting yourself at risk in times. I mean, there's times you just need to read things.
You know, and just the other thing, too, is like binoculars. You go to pull your binoculars up, and I can't see as good out of my glasses as I can. Just I pull my glasses down and then look through my, you know, just my eyes through binoculars. Right. Just I can see better that way. And then I got to pull my glasses back up after I. It's a pain.
It's a pain.
It
is. So I mean, it's money well spent. I'm not gonna sit here and tell you that it's the, you know, if you take 10,000 people with all of them's results come out like mine, I'm perfectly happy with mine.
Yeah, well, that's good.
But I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. But it's changed. It has changed my life. It's changed my life at work, and you know, hunting and fishing and around the house. I mean, you know. Let's say you're working on your car. You're in there working at something, and you're in a tight spot, and you got to get your head just right. And with your glasses on, everything is just a pain as much pain as it can be, right?
Yep.
And so by not having to wear them glasses, you can do just so much more. Now, okay, you need to wear safety glasses when the time is correct for that. Don't get away from taking care of your eyes. But just day to day, man, it's so much better.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to bring that up because a lot of people that wear glasses that love hunting and fishing don't realize that there is something out there. Whether they want to spend $10,000 or not, I don't know. Some people would gladly spend $10,000 to get their eyes fixed and not have to wear glasses anymore hunting and fishing. But that's a very big deal. It is to me, yeah. And I think I'm getting ready to try to get something done on that.
Well, that surgeon told me that everybody, by the time they're in their 30s, their outer lens starts to cloud a little bit. And the older you get, the more it clouds. And that's where cataracts come from.
Right.
And so if you have signs of cataract, then your insurance will take care of it. Because it's basically cataract surgery.
That's right.
The same thing.
But before the insurance pay for it, your cataracts have to be what they call ripe. They got to be to the point where they got to take the cataracts out. And if they do, they'll pay. I don't know if they'll pay for all of the lens because that's not just a normal lens. That multifocal lens is more expensive, I believe. But it may cost you a little bit, but the insurance will take care of the majority of it anyway.
That's right.
So yeah.
It's a game changer. I'll leave it at that. It's definitely going to change your life.
Yes.
You're going to do things and not have to mess with glasses, and you're going to go, man, this is nice.
Man, I can't imagine how well that'd be for hunting, especially turkey hunting or anything.
Oh, yeah. Let's do this. We'll come back from the break and talk about things we can shoot once our eyes are working properly. More with Jay Craddock with Skinner's Ball Game Processing and the Old Folks Show right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Yeah. All right, welcome back to FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors for Mature Hunters.
Yeah. Edition. Elderly, we call us.
Sean Sullivan, Elderly. Mike Ward, and our buddy Jay Graddock from Skinner's Wild Game Processing, which, by the way, schedule at Skinner's. When do y'all get rolling?
We're going to actually open over in Daphne this weekend. We'll be open Saturday and Sunday. We're just going to open on weekends for bow season over there.
Okay.
You can reach out, call me, you know, 251-402-8855, and I'll arrange for somebody to meet you there and take your deer in for you. Of course, they got to be quartered up. We don't skin them there.
No, you do. Thomasville, you do, but here it's quartered.
Right. Thomasville, we're going to open the weekend of youth season.
Okay.
Youth gun season. Yep.
So that is, that's whatever the 9th or whatever it is. That weekend. Yeah.
Yep.
It's, you know, what I'm going to be interested in too, because we talked a little bit before we got into, you know, medical miracles on the show.
Elderly stuff.
we talked about the number of acorns you're hearing from up there. Like I said, Chuck Sykes said you break your ankle, roll your ankle in the woods. Hearing that from people, be interested. You're always good at telling me, like, not just what's in the belly, but the kind of the fat on the deer when they come in. I'm just always interested in that. Some years those deer got the fat packed on. Some years they don't.
Yeah, last year we didn't have the heavy fat like we did the previous year. So that, you know, that is something that I do pay attention to, and it's just interesting.
It is to me too, and I wonder how much of that lines up with acorn crop. You know, not that other places they could be feeding and the deer get fat, but like in not places where they're not feeding. Like, I wonder if you look at big acorn years and fat versus, you know, fail years and skinny.
I'll start doing that. That's a good idea. I'll start trying to take note of that. If the body weights are high on heavy acorn years, our body weights are a little bit lower on lean acorn years. We'll try to put that together.
See, Jay's on my side. Mike looks at me like cross-eyed. Like, what, Sullivan, you worry about the weirdest stuff.
No, I'm curious about all that stuff, too. No.
I'm always interested in figuring out what.
Not to say you're not weird. I'm just saying that I'm interested in that, too.
Good stuff. And then, of course, we can play this game, too. It's good news, you know, for bow hunters to have a lot of acorns dropping, but it also can be bad news. I mean, if we could make it that the one swamp chestnut or white oak or whatever we hunt over, that's the one dropping and the other ones don't, but it doesn't work that way.
You know, nope, it'd be nice don't.
But there is something we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago. I mean, all kind of deer hunting gets me excited, but there's something about being in a stand with a bow in your hand and the acorns are dropping, and then you just hear, I mean, deer just coming to it.
Yep.
You're not calling them. The acorns are calling them. It's not like a turkey hunt, but they're coming. You know they're coming to you, and it's exciting.
Right. It is.
It sure is.
You know, one of the things sure I was going to ask you, Jay, you know, like out in Kansas where we hunt, you know, grunting and rattling is awesome pre-rut, and that's usually about out there. That's about the end of October, the 1st of November, about a week or 10 days in there before the rut really gets started. So here in Alabama, what are we looking at? What do you think is a great time to start grunting and rattling in Alabama?
I think for the average to get, you know, for the average time to get good results is going to be after Christmas.
Yeah.
However, I was lucky one year, opening day of deer season, I'd been sitting in a tree all day and it was about to get dark, a long time ago. And I rattled real hard. I had a little small set of horns in my backpack. I rattled real hard. And a nice buck come running right up to my stand and I shot him. But I think that's the exception and not the rule.
Right.
Once those, you know, deer walk around in the woods and like, I don't know if y'all, does grunt just like bucks. They just don't grunt as loud. But it's a vocalization that they communicate with.
Sure.
I'm not a fan of sitting up in a tree and just blindly grunting. And, you know, I just don't do that. I don't do it on my property because I don't want to tune them up on. Yeah, there's Jay over in that tree again. Listen to him. So I leave that alone until after Christmas. Early January, that's our pre-rut, okay?
That's right. That's right.
Like that, around from the 6th on, the deer killing picks up at Skinner's Wild Game. It's like that seems to be our pivotal time. It'll slowly pick up after that.
January the 6th.
That third week in January, there's a lot of bucks on their feet. Now, they might not be the biggest bucks, but that's when we get those afternoons when we get 40, 50 bucks in one afternoon piled up there at Skinner. So
I like it, Jay. Anyway. We're up against the end of the show, but believe me, we'll do this again real soon.
Yep.
Jay, we appreciate you being on the show. Take care up there and give me some, when you leave the nuclear power plant, give me some hunting stories, all right?
All right, buddy. Y'all be good and be safe.
All right.
Be safe this year.
Thank you, Jay. Appreciate it.
And we'll do it all again next week for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.